One of them is what I call the espresso machine principle, and the other one is the way that you use your time. The espresso machine principle says that for every 1,000 people who will buy a $5 latte, one person will buy a $2,700 gleaming espresso machine. And it's almost like a law of physics, okay? It's ridiculously reliable how this is. In fact, it gives you a whole different view of human behavior, of being ridiculously predictable on a grand scale. And what it says is that money is burning a hole in people's pockets. And so people have different itches. You know, they have an itch to buy shoes, and they have an itch to drink caffeine, and they have an itch to buy a house, and whatever it is. And those itches obey very predictable numerical patterns.
You are listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching, and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Welcome to a special episode of the Elevate podcast this week. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. As some of you know, we've been doing a series for some time now we call The Leadership Diaries. In that series, I always ask whoever I'm interviewing the question, who are you learning from right now? If anyone has asked me that question in the last 12 to 18 months, the name at the top of my list has been Perry Marshall. Even though 2 years ago, I actually had no idea who he even was. But it was a conversation, a chance conversation with one of our suppliers that led me to reading two of Perry's books, the first one being 80-20 Sales and Marketing, and the second one being The Ultimate Guide to Google AdWords, both of which have helped me greatly in various ways in our business. I'd recommend those books to anyone, and I would say without hesitation, they've inspired me to think outside the box and probably do some of my best creative work this year. For me, there have been some massive lessons on productivity, discernment, asking better questions, thinking more strategically, plus much more. For those of you that have heard of Perry Marshall, you'll know he has a massive following from all sorts of entrepreneurs in something that they call Planet Perry. With small and large businesses, he attracts some incredible entrepreneurs and is known for inspiring great clarity in amongst all of the leaders that he coaches. Ahead of Perry bringing his Rosetta Stone event to Sydney, which he is doing in November, and it's for all types of businesses, I invited him onto the podcast and was delighted that he accepted. In this podcast, we're doing the Leadership Diaries, but we also discuss the 80-20 rule, leveraging time, the espresso machine principle as it applies to real estate agents, his tactical triangle of business and how that applies to real estate, how the network effect might work for you and against you in real estate, and reasons some people are good at selling one way and perhaps not others. There are a lot of links in this one. So speaking of leveraging time, we have taken the notes for you with all of the links and all of the good bits so that you can download an action guide for this podcast at eliteagentelevate.com, which has the links for more about Rosetta Stone, 80-20 Sales and Marketing, plus all of the great takeaways from the show. Lastly, instead of downloading these notes, you can also sign up for Extra, where we aggregate all the best action tips and tools from all of our podcasts, wrap them up in an easy-to-consume package, and deliver them right to your door. So if that sounds like an easy option for you that you'd like to check out, please visit eliteagentelevate.com. And once you've downloaded this week's notes, hit that big green button to sign up for Extra, and we will send you all of this month's good stuff in the mail, as well as giving you access to all the notes from all of our previous podcast guests, and there are some great names in there as well. So that's it from me. Grab a cuppa, sit back, relax, and enjoy the chat with Perry Marshall. So welcome to the podcast, Perry Marshall.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor, and it was great to meet you in person in Singapore and then, you know, sit at the bar and talk for hours afterwards. That was great too. That's probably the most fun part, right? Just getting to know people. And I'm delighted to be here, delighted to be coming to Australia in November. So, yeah.
Well, it's hard to believe because I trekked over to Singapore earlier this year in April to attend your Advanced Lead Generation seminar because I thought this is as close to my backyard that Perry Marshall is ever going to get. When was the last time you were in Australia?
'04.
Oh, wow.
And I'm a little embarrassed. I mean, I've got lots of Australians that have come to my seminars and everything. Maybe my only excuse, I have been to 40 different countries and Australia is just one of them. And it's a great place. I mean, I love Australia, but it's a hard place to get to often. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm actually bringing two of my sons and one of my daughters with me. So we're going to make sure we have some fun and everybody will meet them. I mean, they'll be at the seminar and they'll be helping out and everything. So
yeah,
really can't wait.
I'm thinking the Tim Tams might have had something to do with you coming back.
Yes.
Please tell me that's true.
So Samantha brought me Tim Tams and she said, I got a special gift for you. And then she explained the Tim Tam Slam and how that works. And I'm like, well, oh, okay. Never heard of that. And took it home. And sure enough, you know, cup of coffee. Oh, it was great. And the box of Tim Tams disappeared like really quick. I think they lasted maybe half of a day and they were all gone. And my wife liked it. My kids liked it. So I got to come back to Australia and do a Tim Tam Slam again, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I've done a few of your courses now. I've done 30 Day Reboot and I've done Advanced Lead Generation. And as soon as you said you were coming to Australia, I signed up immediately for Rosetta Stone. So first of all, I think I can probably guess where the name Rosetta Stone's come from, but can you tell us a little bit about Rosetta Stone and what we're going to learn there?
Yeah, so the original Rosetta Stone, which is in the British Museum, was this big stone tablet that had three different languages, Egyptian and Coptic, and I don't know, maybe it was Greek or something. And they figured out, they used the fact they were all identical messages in three languages to figure out all three languages, right? It was actually a giant breakthrough in understanding hieroglyphs and all of that sort of stuff. And I realized that there was a similarity. So in 80/20 sales and marketing, I teach that everything in marketing comes down to four things: traffic, conversion, economics, and 80/20. And in fact, it really is true. And we have this thing called a tactical triangle, and we map every single thing, and it's a cycle, and you go around the circle, and it starts with traffic, and then you convert the traffic, and then you get money from the traffic, then you reinvest the money. Now, that's like, that could be a whole seminar all by itself, but that's like one part of the Rosetta Stone. The next part is that there's a whole set of layers of 80/20 strategies that are above marketing, okay? And this is really important because a lot of people, what they're experiencing is, hey, it used to be enough, like if I could write a headline or if I could create a Facebook ad or if I could do Google ad, like I'm good to go, man. I'm getting leads, I'm getting sales, everything is great. And what people are finding now is that is necessary, but absolutely not sufficient. There's a whole level of sophistication and you can spend yourself into oblivion or educate yourself into oblivion, mastering marketing techniques, and then wonder like, well, why am I just spinning my wheels, right? And so there's a whole higher level of strategies, which when you zoom into the tactical triangle and especially the 80/20 part of it, you find, oh, this business was doomed from the beginning. My friend John Mendoza has this really brilliant saying. He says, most business fail in the first 5 minutes. It just takes 3 years for most people to find out.
Yep.
And it's true. Okay. And so there's this whole other set of strategies of, is this a star business? Is this a business that even has a potential to get there? And then the third layer is network effect. And nobody even used to think about this, but what is network effect? Network effect is Uber gets more riders, which attracts more drivers, which lowers the wait time, which attracts more riders, which attracts more drivers, which lowers the wait time. And you have this virtuous circle where, I don't know about where you live, but where I live, it takes 3 to 8 minutes for an Uber to show up and I go anywhere I want. And that's amazing, right? Like, okay, rewind 10 years ago. Taxis, 2 times in the same year, I called a taxi, the taxi came to my house. I said, Midway Airport, 2 different times, the taxi driver said, where's that?
Mm.
Okay, now Midway Airport is like 6 miles from here and it's one of the biggest airports in the United States, right? And the taxi driver doesn't know where it is, you gotta be kidding, right? Well, not so with Uber anymore, right? They completely elevated, but the point is they're competition proof. okay? Other than Lyft, like imagine Uber's already in a city. Good luck starting another taxi.
Yeah, when you're in Sydney, get Ubers. That's that would be my advice, because it's the same here, you know. But I know you've said many times that the taxi industry was ripe for disruption because the service was terrible, the experience was terrible. It was waiting for someone to come along. Often people say that about the real estate industry too. And it's funny, you know, like I've been thinking about your tactical triangle and different real estate companies. So the traffic conversion economics thing, Purple Bricks, who were big in the UK, made a big splash in Australia, and then tried to enter the US. They paid a lot of money for traffic, but they didn't have the conversion and the economics. So, you know, number one, I think it's really interesting that that tactical triangle applies to all businesses, not just one or the other. But two is with real estate being one of these industries where consumers are basically dissatisfied with the length of time it takes them to get a loan or to make an offer or to go and look at a property. Where do you think, if some people are saying the real estate industry is ripe for disruption, what are your thoughts on that?
It's going to get disrupted. Somebody's going to do it. It's not going to stay the way it is. It can't. It's like you said, just think about the taxis, right? What happened with taxis? I mean, it was an awful experience. And I've done some research. I've actually found out that the general Uber idea was attempted a number of times, and Uber was finally the company that got it to go. It wasn't exactly an original idea, but most people in the taxi industry were just asleep at the wheel. They were just like completely unaware, right? I realize that people are going to be at the seminar from all kinds of industries, but you know, you're in real estate, and what's going to happen is somebody's going to figure out how to make a loan happen in 2 hours instead of 2 weeks. Okay. Like, I've got a client who did that. In fact, this is one of the reasons I did Rosetta Stone. It was one of the sparks that made this happen. So I got this client for a long time, Ed Hericke, and he has a company called Swift Capital. In 2011, he came to my house and we did a workshop, and I helped him with his Google ads and stuff. And they were doing small business loans online, and they morphed into, well, let's do it through your merchant account. So you already got money coming into your merchant account. Let's give you a loan through your merchant account. And then we pay back through the merchant account. And it's kind of a factoring thing through merchant account. Well, he said, so he came to a seminar I did in 2014. And at that seminar, he clarified the idea that he has to ruthlessly simplify the loan process. And so he went to work on that. And he said, all right, I don't know how we're going to do this, but you know, right now when somebody applies for a loan, like, okay, we're checking their credit score and we're having them fax in all this stuff. And he said, I don't know how we're going to do it, but we got to get this down to like, you're approved within 30 minutes or an hour. And really, we want to tell you what your rate is online, like within a few minutes, either wait for the screen to refresh or an email comes a few minutes later, a totally automated system that says, okay, this is your rate, this is your monthly payments. And he chiseled and chiseled and chiseled away at this, and he dialed it in. Like he figured out, okay, so this part takes too long, this part takes too long, but I can replace it with this other method. It's close enough. It's not perfect, but the risk is acceptable. And PayPal came and bought him out for a huge, like ungodly sum of money. Okay. Like F you money, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And I started seeing that in Planet Perry, these kinds of things were happening. Okay. WordStream. I knew Larry a long time ago, and he built up that company. It simplified Google advertising, and he sold it to Gannett for $150 million. It's a company that owns USA Today. So this is how Rosetta Stone was born. And what I realized was either you own the network or the network owns you. And whether you're Samantha McLean or John Smith or whoever, you need to own something. And so what started to emerge was what I call network effect for mere mortals. So being Uber is not too realistic for most of us. I'm using it as to illustrate the principle of network effect, okay? It's when you bring buyers and sellers together, and it's exponential when you can do that, okay? Well, I have this term network effect for mere mortals. And what a lot of my students are doing is they are Google ad agencies, they are Facebook ad agencies, they are lead generation consultants. And what they are doing is they're using the fact that their lead generation brings buyers and sellers together, and they're building a network. Finn Peacock in Australia has done this. His company is called solarquotes.com.au, and it's famous.
Yeah, I met him in Singapore. Yeah, he was there.
He was at the Singapore meeting.
Yeah.
Okay, so network effect for mere mortals, it can be obvious. Sometimes it's not obvious that it's going on, but basically what it is that somewhere in your business, there is a virtuous cycle that it gets faster and faster and more effective the bigger your business gets. And so what happens is most businesses get more vulnerable the larger they get. They get more vulnerable to competition. But in network effect, you actually get less vulnerable to competition. Now, I'm the guy who wrote the book on Google advertising. And there was a period of about 5 or 10 years where if you could figure out Google ads, you could like totally dominate your industry. Just knowing Google ads could make you the number one real estate agent in Sydney. Okay. Well, that era passed because eventually everybody started figuring out, oh, this is how these online ads work. And now no longer was it an advantage. So then what happened was I watched a whole bunch of businesses. They had made tons of money, and then all of a sudden they crashed because they didn't have any barriers to entry. And I became very uninterested in quick and dirty businesses that could make a lot of money really fast. I became very interested in businesses that could last a long time. So that's why I'm doing the Rosetta Stone seminar. We did a similar seminar in Chicago a little over a year ago. It was a smash success, standing ovation, record attendance, and success stories are now coming out of that seminar. I've never done it in Australia. I've learned a lot of things in the last year that I didn't know then. So I'm updating all the material. I'm incorporating some other things. And I got a couple of guests. I've got Jack Bourne, who used to work for me. He has a software company called Deadline Funnels. I have Mike Rhodes, who's my co-author on The Ultimate Guide to Google AdWords, and he's going to be talking about traffic and strategy. So I think it's really important to understand either you own the network or the network owns you, and there's really not anything in between. It's binary.
Yeah, I think definitely that's something that will resonate with our audience because I think real estate agents do feel that way. There are a couple of network effects there where I'm sure that they wish they'd played their cards differently in the beginning. But speaking of books, I think I own most of your books, actually. The Ultimate Guide to AdWords was the first one, and then this one, 80-20 Sales and Marketing, which I think everyone should buy it, read it, and then put it down and then read it again and again. Because I go back and I pick up something new each and every time. I mean, look, 80-20, you mentioned that when you were talking about the tactical triangle a little while ago. And look, 80-20 is something that I think I tried to resist for the longest time, but I have since learned the error of my ways, and I'm definitely look at 80-20 in all sorts of things now. As an entrepreneur, where do you think the most important leverage points are in 80-20 if you're in any small business?
Well, I would say there's two things. One of them is what I call the espresso machine principle, and the other one is the way that you use your time. The espresso machine principle says that for every 1,000 people who will buy a $5 latte, one person will buy a $2,700 gleaming espresso machine. And it's almost like a law of physics, okay? It's ridiculously reliable. How this is. In fact, it gives you a whole different view of human behavior, of being ridiculously predictable on a grand scale. And what it says is that money is burning a hole in people's pockets. And so people have different itches. You know, they have an itch to buy shoes, and they have an itch to drink caffeine, and they have an itch to buy a house, and whatever it is. And those itches obey very predictable numerical patterns. And in the 80-20 book, I give you tools for saying, oh, okay, so we rented 100 apartments for $1,000 a month. how many units can we rent for $50,000 a month? And if you go look, you'll find, yes, people are renting space for $50,000 a month. It might not be apartments, but it's, you know, it might be commercial space or whatever. And all the proportions are there. And it gives you the ability to say, oh, well, there's this big giant hole. Like, we don't have a product that costs $700. If we had a product that costs $700, we would sell this many of them. And if we don't, it just means we're doing something wrong, or we got the wrong sales pitch or something, because that money is there. It wants to jump out of somebody's wallet into yours. So that's the first thing. The second thing is time. So there's $10 an hour tasks, $100 an hour, $1,000 an hour, $10,000 an hour. And if I talk to like regular, ordinary people, if I float the idea of making $1,000 an hour, most people are like, well, that's impossible. Like, I don't have any idea. Like, I make $17 an hour as a waitress. Like, I can't fathom. Okay, hang on a second. So let's say that you have a real estate office and somebody calls and you have a receptionist, Helen, and she makes $20 an hour. And Helen, it's really busy at the moment. And Helen says, can you hold, please? And she puts somebody on hold. Now, they were going to buy a $200,000 house and there was going to be $12,000 of commission. And after 2 minutes of being on hold, they hang up and they call somebody else. Helen just lost $12,000 in 2 minutes. Okay, so how many dollars an hour is that?
It's over a thousand.
Yeah, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars an hour. Okay, so actually, and this happens all the time. This doesn't happen once a year, okay? It happens every day. Like dentist office, right? The dentist spends money on advertising and newspapers and Google ads and Facebook ads, and a phone call comes in and it doesn't get handled right, right? And what that means is that devising a system for making sure that nobody ever gets put on hold, nobody ever gets transferred to the wrong person, ends up in a dead end, that a properly qualified salesperson always intercepts that call, even if they were doing something else right now, you devising that system could easily be worth $10,000 an hour. When Ed Hricke designed that system, it took him years to get loan approval from 2 days down to 60 seconds. But he got it to where you could sit there and go, okay, refresh, refresh. Okay, there's your rate. And you don't have to talk to anybody. And then PayPal buys it for probably nine figures, I'm guessing. Well, those meetings where he worked with his team, that was $100,000 an hour work. And so even if that's way out of your league and you can't imagine $100,000 an hour, okay, $1,000 an hour, you should do $1,000 an hour for 1 hour every day. And then you can take the rest of the day off. And that's how you should think about your time.
It's interesting. And if I could just maybe summarize that for some of the real estate entrepreneurs listening in, I took both of those pieces of advice, actually, the one on leverage. So if I think about real estate businesses in Australia at the moment, everyone's worried about their margins and costs being squeezed and consumers wanting more for less. And I think what you're saying there is that not enough people are actually thinking on the right-hand side of the curve, where you could actually be offering a better service and charging more for it, because 20% of your customers will pay for that.
Yes, yes. The espresso machine principle says that there is a super deluxe version that a certain percentage of people will easily pay much more money for. And many often, it's like the concierge level service. If you can make this really simple and really easy, and that's always a lot of work. Like, one thing about my seminars is I am not attracting the starry-eyed, oh, I think I'm going to start a business someday people. That is not who's going to come to this. And if you're going to disrupt your industry, it's going to take some serious effort and some serious focus and concentration. There's one thing it's not, okay? You may have to hustle your buns. You may have to bust your ass, or you may not. I mean, it kind of depends, but you're going to have to bring fresh thinking and questions that you're not used to asking. And you're going to have to start asking new questions. And that's the important part, okay? Just getting better at production isn't going to do it. It'll just get you 5 years from now, you'll be doing the same thing you're doing now. And your industry may have been disrupted by somebody else and your job might not even exist.
Yeah. It's like what I was saying to you before we pressed the record button is what you were talking about, leveraging time and having the time to think. That thinking time, if you're just doing, which is what we were doing last year, if you're spending all your time doing and not enough time thinking, not enough time asking the right questions. I mean, Gary Keller, a big real estate agent, wrote a whole book on the one thing, which was actually thinking more and doing less. So the answers actually come to you when you give yourself the time and space to think. And I think, well, that's what I'm looking forward to most about Rosetta Stone and all of the courses that I've done with you, actually, is they really make me think. So, you know, if anyone out there is daring enough to join me in November, I'm registered. There you go, putting it out there.
Yes, November 11 and 12, and then we have an optional day on the 13th. We're a much smaller group of people. We're going to take their businesses apart and put them back together. Really looking forward to it. I haven't been to Sydney. I've been to Brisbane, so really looking forward to that too.
It's in a very nice place, right underneath the Harbour Bridge, and November in Sydney is spectacular, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. Before we wrap it up, I have got some questions to ask you that we call the Leadership Diaries. It's a series of questions that we ask industry leaders about their businesses so that other aspiring leaders can learn from the experienced guys. So are you ready?
Let's go.
Okay. What was your first job and what did it teach you?
My first job was a janitor job. Now, I'd done paper routes and stuff like that before, but I was sweeping floors in a fire alarm factory. And what I learned was I hated it. Like, I absolutely hated that job. It was lonely. It was like 4:30 to 7 o'clock in the evening every night after school. And it killed my social life. Well, what I did, I saved my money. I mean, I only made about $3.50 an hour at the best. But I saved my money and I started a business building stereo equipment. And I bought equipment and inventory and advertising. And I got this other little tiny business off the ground. And I just remember sweeping floors, thinking about my business. And I know, like, every entrepreneur's done that. Like, you're punching the clock, you're driving a forklift, whatever you're doing, and you're thinking, and you're thinking, and you're thinking, and you're thinking. And you might not even know what you should be thinking about, but you're obsessing.
Yeah. Can you name someone that has had a big impact on you as a leader?
Well, yeah, there are a lot of people, but I'll pick a guy named Dr. Knoll, Robert Knoll. He was an English professor that I had in college. And those of you familiar with Jordan Peterson, the guy's a lot like Jordan Peterson, except, of course, he wasn't a psychologist. He was an English professor. But I remember on the first day of class, he said, a community is a group of people who share the same stories. And then what he proceeded to do, so it was called English Authors Before 1800. It started with Beowulf, which was written in 700 AD. And then we went to about 1800 and we read all of this classic English literature. And I came to understand in that class that human beings have been asking the same fundamental questions for thousands and thousands of years. And there aren't any new questions and there aren't really any new answers either. And I still read a lot of that old literature. I think it's what makes you wise. And he had a huge, huge effect on me. I'm channeling Dr. Knoll every time I get on a stage. I hope to be the most provocative person that has talked to you since you can remember, because that's what he was like.
Yeah. Well, you definitely do make us think, that's for sure. Okay, what's your favorite question to ask somebody in a job interview and what does their answer tell you about the person?
I want to know what their strengths and weaknesses are. I have an exercise. If you go to perrymarshall.com/pink-Kool-Aid with a K, I have this set of questions that you email 10 of your friends and you ask them, what do you think is my unique capability? And then you combine that with, and what are you not good at? When I hire somebody, I want to know what they're good at. I also want to know what they're not good at so that I give them something different. I think of every single person as like a vector. So there's an arrow of what you should point them at. and there's a back end, the tail feathers of what they should be pointed away from. And that's really the key to hiring anybody.
Yeah, I did your marketing DNA test actually. And I think, you know, like, again, I think that's really a relevant thing for real estate agents to have a look at. I was a 9676 and it basically confirmed that I should stay away from numbers and put together pretty pictures, which is in fact what I do.
Excellent. Well, and your magazine reflects that. It's a beautiful magazine. It's really fantastic. I mean, I looked at it. You brought a copy in Singapore. I was like, wow, this is really nice.
Yeah, thank you. Thank
you. Congratulations.
Yeah, so I'll leave a link for the marketing DNA test in the show notes as well, because I think it's really, you know, a lot of agents will say, oh, I hate getting on the phone. But there are other ways to go about sales and marketing, which are much more in your lane. Definitely. I can vouch for that as well. What advice would you give someone going into a leadership position for the first time?
Know thyself. That speaks to everything we said, like the marketing DNA test, for example. You should know how you persuade. And also, the way everybody masters anything. Okay, let's say that you're learning to play the guitar. And so most people, if they get really serious about guitar, they got inspired by somebody. You know, they got inspired by Jimmy Page or Jimi Hendrix or Eric Clapton or somebody. Well, here's how the progression works. First, you do a really bad rendition of Jimi Hendrix. It's awful, okay? Then you get to a surprisingly respectable imitation of Jimi Hendrix, except that it doesn't really sound like Jimmy. Like, you did play the notes, but you still don't sound like him, okay? And the third step is you finally start to sound like yourself. And you find your own voice. And that is when the real leadership kicks in, is when you discover your own voice and you're confident about who and what that voice is and what it speaks about and who it speaks to. And so it's okay to be in that imitation phase. That's fine. Go ahead and do that. But just understand, eventually you're going to detach from that and you're going to be yourself.
Where do good ideas in your business come from? And how do you work out what ideas are in and what ideas are tossed?
My client, Mark McShirley, has a great saying. He says, there's few principles, many ideas, and few decisions. Okay. And so I find that the best ideas that I get, they come from me putting myself in inspiring situations or having space. Okay. So I get a lot of great ideas when I'm in a high energy room with high energy people. It's why we do seminars and masterminds, because if you have a good enough atmosphere, it will raise up the level of people and their thinking. But I also do a surprising amount of travel and riding my bike, doing my hobbies. I've had to, in the last 5 years, give myself explicit permission. So Perry, if you're getting excited about one of your hobby projects, you do not need to justify it. You don't need to rationalize it. Order the parts and build the stuff or buy the plane tickets and put it on the calendar. You don't need to rationalize the creative space. And I think a lot of people are like, okay, someday when I'm finally successful, then I'll take that bike ride, or then I'll go on a vacation with my family. But right now, I'm just going to, and it's almost like they're punishing themselves. And you know what? Inspiration never comes when your fists are clenched. You have to relax. And I realize that doesn't even sound right. Like, please take a chill pill, do something fun in your life. Okay. That's where the breakthroughs come from.
If I could sort of say, one of the biggest breakthroughs for me this year was, I've got a question here. What does the first hour of your day look like? Are you a 5 a.m. clubber? Because the real estate industry is notorious for the 5 a.m. club. I think Robin Sharma started it, and there are a couple of coaches here in the industry that believe in it.
I don't know that term. I'm sorry. What is that?
The 5 a.m. club.
Yeah. What is that?
You get up at 5 a.m., you go to the gym, you make 25 calls before 10 o'clock or 100 calls before 10 o'clock and hustle, hustle, hustle. And when I started in the real estate industry, I caught that. I caught that thinking I had to get up at 5 o'clock and be on the phone and going to the gym and all that sort of stuff until I kind of thought about, well, what actually works for me. I mean, I get up at 5 o'clock now, and I think the single best habit I picked up from you on picking up a pen and paper first thing in the morning rather than picking up my phone. So I don't think I'll ask you that question.
Well, I do that. You know, I get up at 5:45 and I journal for a minimum of 1 hour and sometimes two. Then I do my highest level creative thinking and creating time. And then I usually engage with the outside world at 11:30. Now, most people can't imagine that. It seems very backwards. But what I'm doing is I'm moving the $10,000 an hour work immediately after I've had space with my notebook and my thoughts and my cup of tea. And I'm telling you, that works so much better. And I think hustling is very often not most people's highest value skill. True for some, but not for most. Not for most entrepreneurs I know.
Yeah. And then you get into a bit of a vicious circle, don't you? Thinking if I'm not hustling, then I'm not performing.
That is very destructive, actually, because it tears apart your relationships. But you know what it also does is it starts requiring you to hustle more and more. It's dreadful.
So if you're listening to this, pick up a pen and a paper, and we'll even give you a journal to do it in, an Elite Agent journal.
Yes. We've got them now. Do not start your day on a phone, in an email box, social media, news. No. Like, go take a shower, get yourself a cup of coffee, sit down with your notebook, and be alone with your thoughts in the morning. Oh, I had a dream. I had an idea in the shower. This is what I'm thinking about doing today. This is what I'm grateful about from yesterday. And like, you get in that space first. It's like putting armor on. I can't explain it. When you do that, your whole day goes so much better. Your energy is different. It's way, way better.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, what does leadership at home look like?
Well, I'm going to probably have to confess to some hypocrisy, okay? But it's being present for one thing. And I am the classic, believe me, I'm the classic absent-minded professor. I kind of live in my head and I have all of these ideas. But you know, one of the best habits or rituals or whatever that I picked up in the last couple of years is I take my kids places when I go. I'm taking my kids to Australia. I can't bring all of them, but I'm bringing three of them. Well, we have so much fun. I take them on business trips and like whatever. Sometimes it's mostly work, but hey, we're in hotels, we're in restaurants, we're in cabs, we're in airplanes. We're talking to each other. And that is so cool. And everybody's different, but my kids are getting a little bit older now. They're teenagers and early 20s. And I love adult kids. I think it is so wonderful. It is so much fun. And yeah, so I hope that's helpful.
Yeah. So we've talked about a whole bunch of stuff today in terms of things that are going to happen at Rosetta Stone. We've talked about tactical triangles and 80-20 and how to start your day right and all of that sort of thing, which is amazing. And you guys that are thinking about coming to Rosetta Stone, please do, because it'll be amazing. What is one thing that you'd like to leave everyone with as a result of listening to this podcast this morning?
So I think most people are way too overstimulated, too much stuff that's only important for 5 seconds, okay? I think everybody should read something written before Gutenberg every day. That is like the antidote to Twitter. It's the antidote to Facebook. If something was written before the printing press, it means it was copied by hand by scribes and hidden in urns in caves so that when they burned Rome or Alexandria, that it still survived. And the only stuff we have is the stuff that did survive all that, which means somebody must have thought it was really important. And almost anything that old, whatever it's talking about, it's important and it's valuable and it's relevant right now. What your friend had sushi for lunch yesterday isn't relevant to anybody. Nobody's going to save that for thousands of years. And what does that do for you? That gives you a clear sense of what is going to come and go and what is going to last a long time. Now, I'm really into music, and there is a lot of music that has not aged well. You know what I'm saying?
The 80s have a lot to answer for.
Right? Yeah. Most of the 80s, right? There is other music that ages very well. Well, the only way I know of to learn how to make things that age well is to surround yourself with things that age well. Because it's not like there's a formula exactly, okay? But if you listen to music that ages well, you'll make music that ages well. If you read literature that ages well, you'll write blog posts that age well. I have 10-year-old blog posts that are just as fresh as the day that they were written. Now, I think all this comes down to a point, and here's the point. Are you going to build things that you have to rebuild next month and rebuild next year and start over and start over and start over? Or are you going to build things that last? I mean, that is what I'm about. What if you built a business that lasted 10 years? What if you built a business that lasted 100 years? What if the way that you do your business by engineering it the right way was very little needed to change in the next 10 years? And you could just let that business run, and then you can step outside of that business and be the creative person and do whatever is important to you. That's how I want you to think about your business and about your life, because life is too short to just do the same stuff over and over again.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. There is going to be a lot of links and a lot of show notes for this podcast. Perry Marshall, thank you for being so generous with your knowledge, and we look forward to seeing you in Sydney pretty soon.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. It's an honor to have met you, and it was a joy to eat Tim Tam Slam. So, thank you.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching, and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.